Our next speaker was president of the Million Dollar Roundtable Foundation in 2004. John Marshall Lee is an outstanding individual. He has been president of both the state and local association. He has participated in each of the foundation, Million Dollar Roundtable Foundation service projects since 1994, including the Habitat for Humanity homes, the playgrounds around the world, or the kids around the world playground things, the wheelchair distributions, the Million Meal Challenge last year in Vancouver. He has spoken to groups all over the world, in Taiwan and Hong Kong and Ireland and the Philippines and Malaysia. He's married to Mary Lou, his lovely wife. You know, wave at us, Mary Lou, so we can see you. Mary Lou is his companion today. They flew in and made it here in the early morning hours this morning. Flight was a little bit of a challenge. Mary Lou is a literacy specialist in their local schools, and we're glad to have you here with us. John is a volunteer. He has been a volunteer all of his life, and so he comes by the MDRT Foundation very naturally. His stated mission is let us help you live. Now, John graduated Yale University. The day after he graduated, he signed his agent's contract, and he joined NAFA. He is a joiner. He is a doer. He is one who 4 years later qualified for Million Dollar Roundtable. And for the last 38 consecutive years, he has not only qualified but attended the annual meeting of Million Dollar Roundtable. His statement, "Let us help you live," maybe flies in the face of the question, have you thought what it might be if you were about to die? Have you ever considered that you might die, like, right away, like now? John is here to share with us an experience that began in 1990 that led him to write and present at Million Dollar Roundtable. Table, a dress rehearsal for my death. Please welcome John Marshall Lee.
Thank you, John. Welcome to all the Grant Taggart conferees. Thank you for being here this morning. Are any of you worried about the title? I mean, Mike was up here a moment ago. In a way, Mike had a dress rehearsal. He fell back on that bed. And I'm going to tell you about my dress rehearsal shortly. Sit down, tell you my story, because that's what Mike was about. And all of us have stories. That's what responding to the challenge of change is about. The stories we live, the stories others live, the lessons we draw from them. And I'm going to share in the two afternoon sessions a lot of technique and material I've used in the 46 years in the business. But this morning, I'm responding to the, there are three people in the audience whom I know, my good wife, your later speaker, Julian Good, and John Homer. Now, John Homer looked at the list of items that are on my speakers bureau CV, and he picked out dress rehearsal for my death. The reason you'll hear that story is that in 1990, after something happened, it's my way of processing things. How many people in the audience have an idea but need to talk it out to other people before it becomes their own? Anybody? A few. Okay. Other people write it out. Other people act it out. But my way is to get it down on paper and edit. And so the story was important to me because I had to listen to what happened to me to understand how I was changing. Now, I am a financial listener, and I'll get into that in a moment. But Does anybody find anything humorous about financial listener? Is it anybody, any other financial listeners out there? Couple, okay. But try to tell compliance people that you're a financial listener, as I did on a couple of occasions, and they tell you, you can't use it. And so what am I listening for? Well, I'm listening for the other to speak. I know that the broad concept and some of the creators of that are familiar to you as an audience. They ask questions and they listen. So let me listen. We had MDRT people stand up. How many people in the audience are in their first 5 years in the business? Okay, good number. Okay. How many people are in this career, whether new or old, where the financial services career is their first real career? I mean, they may have had jobs or whatever from 16 on, but it's their first real career. And therefore only, large number, half maybe. Okay, that's impressive. How many people are disturbed by hearing a guy from the East Coast wearing a pink shirt and a bow tie? One, two, a minority. Thank you, you're courageous, okay? As I am for wearing it. All right. How many people are in this business to make money? Most of you. How many are in the business to help others? Okay. I talk about being a financial listener. What am I listening for? I'm listening for something that the previous speaker talked about. He talked about the pain people in this room are carrying. So I listen for problems, issues, concerns. P-I-C, problems, issues, concerns. I'm always looking at them. As a Flatlander who looks out at Long Island Sound in the morning when I get up to look at your mountains in the daytime, coming in last night around 1 o'clock, we didn't see them. But we saw that you're getting a lot of money from the federal government to repair the roads and improve the highways. People working. It's a good thing. All right. Problems, issues, concerns. I was taught to present conceptually alternatives, solutions, ideas. What I learned in the first 4 years and again in my career is when I present alternative solutions and ideas, before I learn that there are problems, issues, and concerns the other person hasn't told me about yet, I'm not very successful. I can increase my success by getting to those problems, issues, and concerns. So all of us are told, take care of yourself first, right? How many people feel that they're in good shape? I'm talking now about business. How many people have their legal agreements, their insurance? They're ready for this dress rehearsal for death I'm going to tell you about. How many people feel they're pretty good? How many people in the room know that they need to do more work on that? Okay. Those people who just raised your hands, would you please make a note that when you go back to the office today, put it on your to-do list right at the top. I'm going to do what needs to be done. And we'll hear what happened to me. I chose this comfortable chair, and this is from John Homer's office, so I thank John. It sits you down comfortably, but not too low. And I just figure this is kind of like when we're young, and I'm going to read you what I wrote, because I needed to hear my own story in my own words. And this was printed in Round the Table magazine in 1991. On the eve of the MDRT New Year, September 1st, 1990, as midnight approached, I lingered minutes away from physical death in a hospital emergency room. I had walked into the emergency room at 7:30 under my own power, complaining about back discomfort. I didn't use the word pain. I didn't understand pain. I'd done marathon running. I knew what It was, but this was discomfort. An examination and some x-rays over the next 3 hours indicated that I had probably a kidney stone. How many kidney stone candidates in the audience? Okay, you know about pain. As pain increased, Valium and then morphine were prescribed. I used to work as a volunteer on drug programs in the 70s and didn't do drugs. But the first time I got to do drugs, I found morphine. And I'm told that I was begging for it about 10:30, so it was a drug of choice. At 11:15 p.m., the doctors decided to do an intravenous pyelogram, an IVP, which injects a contrast dye so that the x-ray could pick up the guilty kidney stones wherever they might be. But within minutes, my body reacted totally and violently by succumbing to total anaphylaxis. My vascular system opened up, just relaxed completely, and my blood pressure dropped to zero. Well, it's not really zero, but when they can't get it on a machine and they can't get it by hand, then it's not a factor. My heart kept pumping, my pulse rate dropped, my respiratory system began to shut down, and I had to be intubated. We share that too. I didn't like that. I pulled out the tubes 3 times, I'm told. Now that your code blue, that's the second thing, you know. And my liver and my kidney decided that since every other system was deciding to take a rest, they'd shut down as well, take a vacation, and things were critical. I often think now, as I wrote the story, how the emergency room doctor was thinking. Guy comes in, he probably got kidney stones, and look at what happened. Now, I walked out of the hospital 10 days later under my own power, but at 70% of stamina level with which I'd entered. For 6 of the 10 days in early September, I was creating no current memory. Okay, how many people have a personal computer? Everybody, right? You put some data in the computer, 10 minutes later you go back to get it, and the computer says, file not found. Anybody had that happen to them? I did, that's why I can tell you the story. But I had it physically. In other words, I had events going on for the next 6-7 days, and my head couldn't find the current memory. You know what they call you when you have no current memory? There's no rock, there's no hard place, you have no problems. I was hugging everybody, okay? From what the little bit I can remember the tactile hugging, okay? But basically, if that had continued, I would have been out of business, because we all multitask. So I don't remember who visited me, who talked to me. During the last 4 days, when various tests were administered to check out heart, brain, and other systems, I'd recovered my current memory ability. That's an interesting story, but I'm not doing that today. A year later, I was issued preferred insurance. I asked the underwriter, why? They said, you survived it. And apparently no damage to heart or brain. I had my friends to tell me that there was probably some damage to the latter, but so I was happy to be alive for sure. My first hospitalization ever is hopefully my last for some time. I've taken care of some old business. I had an overhead expense disability application for $3,000 a month additional and a life insurance application on my desk, signed, but they hadn't been sent in. The life was for the MDRT Foundation. I had to wait a year to submit it. I have signed a living will. I have applied for a medical alert bracelet and delayed to this date smoking my favorite pipe. I was a pipe smoker for about 25 years, gave that up. It wasn't easy. Finally, I selected a complete list of doctors for future treatment if necessary. I had no doctors at that time. You know, I went to doctors for what? To sign up for life or DI. That's the only reason, have a medical exam. I hadn't needed it. But then I picked a guy 15 years young. I thanked my maker for giving me the experience, for sharing the moment with me, and what learning could I get from that. And I figured I'd be better prepared for that which may come, responding to the challenge of change, your title. Now, I've shared a personal experience which I never contemplated would happen, but I think that's true of most of the excitement in life. And to indicate that the law of large numbers, that which our wonderful products are based on, works on all of us, okay? If there are things you've put off doing, can you plan them today and work on them today? If they're important to you or critical to the people and organizations you love, you care about, don't you want to accomplish them? I think you probably do. I don't know what's blocking, but again, for those people who are happy with moving something up their list, I think it'll be helpful to you. Now, what did I learn? So I took a look at what I'd done well and what I hadn't done well, and this is quick. I'm not teaching any of you anything. You've seen lists. But a medical authorization, power of attorney I had, a living will I got. Health and income insurances were tested. You know, I had friends after this event who said, aren't you going to kiss the butt of the doctor who saved your life? The other group said, aren't you going to sue the hospital? I was somewhere in the middle. I was happy to be alive. And all of my insurances tested out. Didn't have to test the disability. I had long waiting periods. But I knew it was there if I had not come back. I had a list. I had been orderly in my employment benefits, the military benefits. I knew what Social Security would pay and how it would if it was needed. I don't know about you. Do you keep a current balance sheet? Do you keep your statements together? Does anybody know? Do your significant others know where they are? I think we take care of ourselves less well than many other people, than many of our clients. And that's an unhappy situation when bad things happen to you. So these are things that you might think about. On the estate or financial planning checklist, I had no list of doctors, records of regular tests and current medications, but I began them after that. I keep a file, any tests done, so I have my own history if I need it. List of professional advisors. Sometimes our spouses don't know whom we trust. They don't know whom we have done. They may know the accountant because they do the tax return. But as you get a little more complicated, if you've got business, if you've got real estate you own, if you've got operating businesses you operate, you may have different advisors. And they change from time to time. Who are the people who your survivors are going to reach out to? I had no letter of last wishes and instructions. Yeah, wills and trusts, but there's something personal you can add to the legal documents. Have you done that? Have you shared your humanity in that letter? Have you reached out to your children, to your grandchildren? Something meaningful. Life insurance benefits and current beneficiary listings, especially after 45, 46 years in the business, I'm looking at beneficiary and ownership and whatever with a lot of my clients that are just not accurate. You need some activity these days? Go back and talk to some of the folks. They'll be happy you made the service call. Go back to some of the prospects whom you've never sold, whose agents are gone. Go back and take a look at ownership and beneficiary. And business agreements relating to real property or operating entities. I had a buy-sell agreement with a general agent co-partner. It was funded, life insurance, funded disability. I had agreements to agree on real estate. So what did I learn? I learned that, gee, if death occurred, that I was in pretty good shape. Not perfect. I had that deferred comp going the wrong way. But I was in pretty good shape. And that I got in better shape because I got doctors and whatever. And fast forward in 1990, I'm a whitewater paddler. Two months later, I went on the Gauley River in West Virginia. Done that a few times, but although I paddled out here frequently because the wild and scenic rivers in the West, the Green in Utah, the Selway, the Maine, the Middle, and the Lower Salmon, and a lot of other rivers are wonderful out here. In 92, my mom died, but I took the time. She lived with me for 3 months before her death, and it was a great time to be together. In 93, I married Mary Lou, who is, was identified by John Homer kindly. I had been single for a while, and Mary Lou learned about 10-3-1. Mary Lou, I'm sorry, but 10-3-1, you all know, is the what? Purdue formula. Make 10 calls, you get 3 appointments, you make 1 sale. Well, when I decided to get serious about a relationship, I had 10 dates. I repeated the date with 3 women, and I ended up marrying Mary Lou, my trophy wife. So anyway, we laugh about all this, but she's a good sport, and she does know 10-3-1. In 94, I ran my 6th and last marathon, Washington Marine Corps. 95, 96, my GA partner had a heart attack. Our agreement came up again. Our funding came up again, and he went on permanent disability. And I solo GA to 2001. In 97, my son married. In 98 to 02, I went for spiritual development at night for 4 years. School of Spirituality, became a spiritual director, called Holy Listening. And that's where the financial listening, I said, gee, being a companion to someone on their spiritual journey, I've been accompanying people on their financial journey. When I stopped the GA, I needed a line for my card, blank listener, financial listener. In MDRT Foundation Board in 2004, chaired it, and then new partner and I went independent in the year 2005. And it's been a fun journey. I never know exactly what's going to happen the next day. Now, so here we are. I am a singer, as you'll, but not to the extent that, I've been in Carnegie Hall twice with a choir, so that's a real kick. But the a cappella girls were just wonderful this morning. It's great to hear people share talent with others. And music does something to our soul. So here we are in 2009, and I have another wake-up call, another rehearsal. It's 2 a.m., and I got poetic with this. Let me try it on you. 'Twas a night before jury duty, and all through the house, no one was stirring. I never heard a mouse. A sense of great pressure on my breastbone was felt, and I wakened in a daze to make sense of what's dealt. The chest pressure maintained, my mind raced for the cause, since no gastric juices flowed, no reflux, I paused. Could this be it? A heart attack at night? Raised my arm, no tingling. Should I turn on the light and waken my wife? Call an ambulance? No, I denied all. I'd take my mortal chance. I'm leaving poetry for prose because I can still tell the story. I am truthful now. I was not smart. The rest's not allegory. Now, I couldn't get back to sleep. So rather than disturb Mary Lou, I got out of bed, went down to look at television. Anybody watch television at 2 a.m. in the morning? Does not put you to sleep. Somehow, over the next 2 hours, I found myself way to rest. The breathing exercise is one thing or another. The pain, the discomfort, the baby elephant sitting there went away. How many people have had that happen to them? One, two, maybe. You'll know it. You can identify it. Use the term. It's scientific. Baby elephant, middle of chest. They'll know what you're talking about in the emergency room. I sleep until I went back up to bed at 4 a.m., slept until the alarm went off, got up, showered, dressed, wondering just what had happened. In the afternoon, a call, or in the morning, I went off to jury duty. Nothing happened in the morning, went to lunch. In the afternoon, I got a call for a civil trial. You ever go to jury duty? No. 3 attorneys on the case, 2 doctors on the case. They said, pick up your stuff and get out of here. I didn't have to serve that day. But I had a Mendelssohn choir rehearsal at 7:30 in the evening, went to that. By 8 o'clock, in the middle of a song, I was so profoundly tired that I just picked everything up and went. No pain. Pain is an indicator. What happens when there's no pain? So I walked out of the building. It was a chilly evening. It was below freezing. I got to the curb. I said, can I make it to the car? I did make it to the car. I got in the car, drove home. 8:30 in the evening, Mary Lou's doing schoolwork. I said, she said, what, no rehearsal? I said, no, I'm just tired. I went to bed. I got up the next morning. It had snowed. She had a day off of school. And I started being smart. I said, I don't know what happened Monday night. I don't know about my profound tiredness. I'm going to a doctor today. Got a 3 o'clock appointment. At 3:30, I'm sitting at his table, and he says, he kept asking me, do you have any pain? The EKG, he was looking at it, made him gray. And I said, no pain. He said, well, what I'm going to do is you're going to the hospital. You're going in an ambulance. We're not going to put the siren on. My only question was, can I call Mary Lou and let her? No, he said, yeah, he did. I got to the hospital, found a very funny chaplain who said, happy to see you here. But I got in the real emergency room and had three doctors keep asking me, any pain, whatever. The next day, they operated, put in a couple stents. Didn't seem like a big thing to me. 3 days later, I'm home. Now, what I am contrasting in my mind, I had survived again the physical trauma. But what was its meaning to me at 66 versus what had happened 19 years before at 47? How much would my life change? After all, my own dad had died at 51, about the same age as when I'd run that last marathon. And I did know, or I did not know it at the time, but I'd been off doing a playground in Zambia and running a one-day whitewater trip on the Zambezi, which is one of the best 10, at low water, one of the best 10 whitewater day trips in the world. And while I'm doing that at home, my brother's having the same thing happen to me 3 months before, but we just didn't know about it. He was back at work. It didn't mean anything. How would my life change? What would you do? What would I do? And what do you see happening with friends and clients who go through this? And there are plenty of choices. I'd survive 2 real serious wake-up calls. But what if you don't die? Well, the first time you saw what I'd done, I went to estate planning, whatever. What if I did die? Now it was, what if you don't die? And so I'm planning to live, not forever, but for a long time. And the change in attitude says, okay, let's look at nutrition. And that may not look at one of my strong suits, but I eat better than before. I've always eaten well, but I try to eat smarter. And physical training. I was an aerobic guy, but I'd never done any strength training. Did you take a look at the shoulder muscles on our basketball player here? Or amazing, right? And so he's been doing some strength training. And it's good for all of us. You stand a little bit taller. You may get out of breath, but that's okay. I resumed a full schedule. There were new challenges, okay? We got challenges in the business. We got challenges in our communities. We got challenges in our churches. There's change everywhere. Where are you being a leader? Staying in the moment. Sometimes with a busy schedule, you're tempted to run from one thing to another. What I did, I learned to let go on some things that were less important, and that's made all the difference. So, what I would do, in just suggesting, I've talked a little bit about financial listening, problems, issues, concerns. I will show you a safety net that you can show your clients. And when do you check out your safety net? These are some of the skill things. But what I'm trying to do today is just to give you a sense of the philosophical the legacy. Remind you of the legacy you leave. It's not just money with an insurance policy. It's your behavior. It's your actions. It's the time you've spent with others. It's the things you've stood for. It's what you've written. It's what you've said. It's the pictures. And the roundtable, the $1 million roundtable, has been for 38 years going to a whole bunch of meetings. Before, it was the Premier Association of Financial Professionals, okay? And I don't know, you know, not exactly a baseball player, but I'll deal with that too, how I learned my elevator talk from failing to be able to hit it back to people. But I would like to, with the playgrounds that I've built in countries, with the wheelchairs that I have helped distribute, with the habitat houses that have come as in New Orleans or in Thailand as a result, I've worn a different hat, okay? This is a real dirty hat. One of my sons gave it to me. And I don't know whether you can read it. Can anybody read it? Yell it out. Ugly and ordinary. You know who loves this hat? I've been offered money for this hat by people in the travel business. Because, you know, when we go up to that travel desk and we present ourselves as super ordinary people who deserve whatever, they see this hat. If I am congruent with the feeling of this hat, if I don't go off on my high horse, I get treated better. But ugly and ordinary, we've got so much to be thankful for, so much to be grateful for, so much to respond to in terms of whole person growth that the roundtable has happened. Think about what you can do with one-handed giving, writing checks, writing insurances, writing other things. But think of what you can do with two-handed giving, your volunteer efforts, using your brain, your physical power to help others who are in a time of need. Again, I hope this morning that I've given you a hint of what's what. Who knows what this is? $1,000 bills, okay. They don't have the back, so they're not that useful. But I'd like to talk to you about the value of money and a bunch of things this afternoon and tomorrow afternoon. Encourage you, give you ideas that hopefully you can pass along. There is no book, so you have to be present. Very much wish you peace and good health to you and your families.